good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me, as always, is Benjamin Solak. It is one of the days of the week that's becoming everybody's favorite. It is another episode of Team Takeover Tuesday, mainly because the alliterations are just out of control in the title and people cannot contain themselves. Today, we're going over the New York Jets. We bounced around a little bit. We've done a couple of other teams. We started with the Jacksonville Jaguars at the top of the draft, and then we've bounced around a little bit, but we're landing in on number two, the New York Jets. It's a team that had a lot of seats to fill, a lot of changes to make, and a lot of decisions to still make throughout this offseason. So if you are new to Team Takeover Tuesday, what Ben and I are going to do is we're going to take a look at the front office first, then take a look at the coaching staff, whether they had some moves or not. The New York Jets did. We're going to analyze their free agent setup coming up, how much money they have, what their projected cap spending could be in 2021, look at some of the guys that are on the market, look at some of the players that they have to re-sign on their own roster as well, kind of formulate a plan. And then end the episode with a three-round mock draft, which is going to be exciting for the Jets because they have two first-round picks and they've got a lot of assets to add to the team, ultimately fixing this franchise, as is the theme of the episode. Before we dig into it too much, Ben, my friend, how are you?
Everything is delicious. Enjoying the fallout of Championship Sunday. Always good to watch.
As am I, my friend. As am I.
This is it, dude. Like, this is now officially coaching carousel is almost done.
Yep.
Senior Bowl is underway down in Mobile this week. No TDN presence, very sadly, but, you know, just to be safe and be healthy. It is now like the coaching, as the carousel finishes, the Senior Bowl is played. We got one more game for the 2020 season, and then it's officially like full on
for everybody.
NFL Draft, baby.
Hell yeah. That's what this podcast is all about. Okay,
locked
so
on!
New York Jets. You know, I'll just go out on a limb and say it. It wasn't a good year. I'll say it. I'll be the first
one
to do it.
You know what? I'm bold. This podcast is brave.
Yeah, I'll
do
it.
Do as well as they hoped.
I'll go where no man or woman has gone before, and I'll say it. It was not a good year for the New York Jets. They finished the season 2-14. Were famously winless throughout the entire season, going into the month of December, and then should I say stupidly? Should I use the word stupidly on the podcast?
Here we go.
Ill-advised wins down the stretch. There we go. Saved it. Lost them out on the number one overall pick. Now they are picking number two overall. They had a lot of changes to make. Their leadership at the top was not good. Not GM, and we're going to get a GM in a second, but it was really, it had to do with the head coach. It had to do with their old head coach who was no longer there, Adam Gase, who, man, Gase was one of the worst head coaches over the last probably 4 or 5 years. Had a record of 32-48, including his tenure with the Jets. He was also the head coach of the Dolphins and failed there in Miami before getting this job, which was kind of a surprise that he immediately got another head coaching gig. Obviously, he came to prominence because he did so well as the offensive coordinator with the Denver Broncos, but Peyton Manning was there during those years, so it's not like Gase was really doing a ton. And so, yeah, the Jets kind of fell on their Adam Gase sword after they signed him. But you can't really blame the guy that's currently sitting in the general manager seat. That's Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas, give you a little background on him. Scout for 14 years with the Baltimore Ravens. 14 years with the same organization. I thought that was pretty impressive. Then he got hired
to be the director
of scouting for the Chicago Bears for 1 year before he was plucked to be the VP of player personnel for the Philadelphia Eagles for 3 seasons during their Super Bowl run. Hired to be the Jets general manager in 2019. But the big context here with Joe Douglas, and you can get into a little bit of maybe the Eagles background if you have some more background on him there, but the big context for Joe Douglas, before we dove into that, was he inherited Adam Gase in his first season because Gase was hired in January of 2019. Douglas wasn't hired until June of 2019. They let that whole offseason go by with Mike Maccagnan as their GM. They let Mike Maccagnan even go through an entire draft class, and then they fired him.
This is your favorite thing. There's nothing you love more than the fact that the Jets let Maccagnan have one more draft class.
I just don't understand. If he was that close to being fired, you had the number 3 overall pick.
This man spent 68 on Ja'Kai Polite because he knew it didn't matter.
I just don't understand. You had the number. It's not even like the Jets were picking 18th. Oh, shout out to every team that's ever picked 18th. I don't mean that to be disrespect, but it's not even if they were picking 18th. They're picking 3. This guy was on the line of being fired the summer that he was, and you let him draft at number 3 over. I just don't understand it. So, yeah, I had to get this out of the way. He inherited Adam Gase, so he didn't actually hire Adam Gase. He also inherited Sam Darnold, who was going into his second year. So he's never had the chance to get, quote-unquote, his quarterback in the building. They still have Darnold, obviously. But, yeah, his first draft class was even 2020, which was the draft class that gave us Mekhi Becton, Denzel Mims, Ashton Davis, Jabari Zuniga, LaMichael Perine, Bryce Hall. And so he had to deal with all that stuff, as well as he was the general manager who had to navigate the choppy waters of the Jamal Adams situation. Jamal Adams, obviously a top 5 pick himself, was... No, wait, he was 6, right? Did Jamal Adams...
Jamal Adams was 6th overall.
6, okay. So top 5 was one off. So top 6 overall pick, and disgruntled, wanted a new contract, was one of the most outspoken fan favorite kind of players in the league, so he thought he was going to be able to leverage it against the Jets, and they were like, whoa, slow your roll here. Ultimately, they found a trade partner for him, and beautifully and wonderfully done, I would say. My hat is off to Joe Douglas. He somehow got 2 first-round picks out of a disgruntled player that didn't even want to be there anymore. So all of that is background, I think, information into where we are currently front office-wise with the Jets, and I'll kind of let you fill in the cracks of anything that I might have missed for the details that you wanted to mention here.
Right. I think that the Joe Douglas conversation is an interesting one, an important one. When he was here in Philadelphia, they didn't have great drafts for those couple of years. And it's tricky. Roseman takes the brunt of that blame. The idea was that Douglas would get paired with Roseman to help solve that problem. The Eagles go through 2016, 2017, 2018, and the 2019 drafts with Douglas included. And he wasn't, I'm not really sure what he brought. You know what I mean? Their draft record didn't get much better. A lot of the conversation around certain players became like, was he a Douglas guy or was he a Roseman guy? J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was viewed as like a Douglas guy. Was Andre Dillard a Douglas guy? Because it was all advanced metrics that had Dillard as a really good player and his film wasn't necessarily as good, so on and so forth. He obviously gets to New York and hits his first draft class seemingly out of the park, right? Like that. If you're a Jets fan and you've got a lot of faith in Joe Douglas can be the guy to turn it around. You have to be able to look at the 2020 class. Mekhi Becton, Denzel Mims, Ashton Davis, Jabari Zuniga, LaMichael Perine, Bryce Hall. Like, all of those guys played to some degree and were valuable to varying degrees, obviously with Mekhi Becton really being the star of that class. You have to be happy with that. But Douglas gets talked about as a really proven quality general manager a lot in the league, and he's got good friends in the media. Like, if there's not, like, he and Daniel Jeremiah are just super close, and so DJ for years has just been like, Joe Douglas is a great future general manager, and I feel like we all kind of go, yes, Joe Douglas is a great future general manager, whereas really, like, the there's not a huge body of work to argue on here. So I think that Douglas obviously is deserving of the job. Like, he is as good of a shot as anybody else. He came up through a great tree, like you talked about in Baltimore, Ozzie Newsome tree, and then he had the stop in Philadelphia, maybe picked up some, oh, this is a good analytic, this is a bad analytic, whatever. But I'm far from all the way it sold. I'm far from all the way, like, you know, Douglas is the key personnel guy necessary to orchestrate such an interchange, you know, to have such a key pick and to have so much cap space. Front offices are always it takes a village situation. You always want to be filled with good personnel guys. So, the single general manager gets too much credit when a front office does well and gets too much blame when a front office does poorly. So it's not all Douglas, but it is to say that I just think we hand wave over the biggest problem with the New York Jets, which is they need more talent everywhere.
Right.
And
sure.
And this isn't a established, has done it twice, has done it three times general manager who's built up multiple teams. This is not the case. This is Douglas's first swing at the bat here, and I think he's prepared, but I'm not as confident as I think others are that it's going to go as well, as quickly, as successfully.
I think there's certainly a lot that goes into it. Like you said, this is not a quick fix for the New York Jets. We're going to attempt to fix the team, but you know, it's not like we're putting them on a Super Bowl path next year. They're just not in that spot. But I did want to outline where Joe Douglas is, because there was talk of the Jets just completely moving on from Joe Douglas, wiping the slate clean, and I wasn't all the way there with that. And when you kind of put that background information out there and you realize that really seems like a lot of what went wrong in New York was Adam Gase and not Joe Douglas, especially
yes.
given the fact that Joe Douglas did not bring in Adam Gase. I think that you can give him certainly a pass and say, okay, you, I don't know, deserve is a weird word, right? Because like you said there, there's so much we don't know about front office guys. Deserve, he's never done it before. He's in the seat. He hasn't done anything to say that he should not be in the seat. I'll say that. And I wanted to mention the Jamal Adams trade, because over the last couple of years, like, they've moved on from some of their better players. You know, Le'Veon Bell, I thought that signing was kind of a disaster, but again, that wasn't his signing. Le'Veon Bell is no longer there. They didn't retain Robbie Anderson, and Robbie Anderson played really well for Carolina. Meanwhile, the Jets don't really have any playmakers on offense, so that's a weird look. But the Jamal Adams thing is a big one to me. You're going to have hits and misses, especially early on as a GM. But for him to come away with the Jamal Adams trade with two first-round picks was really, really good to
Huge.
Me. This Huge. He got a quarterback price for a safety that didn't want to be there. Jamal Adams was, and this is what Jamal Adams does. Jamal Adams wears his heart on his Twitter account, his feelings on his Twitter account, if you will, and he is always saying what he feels, and he was making it more and more difficult for the Jets to get something good in return the more he kind of trash-talked what was going on there. Was very visible with how unhappy he was, and somehow Douglas was able to get two first-round picks out of it, so I think that was good. So Adam Gase is no longer there. Adam Gase is the root of, I think, a lot of the problems that were in New York, and so he is no longer there. They cut him off. Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator from the San Francisco 49ers, he is now the head coach that they hired, and he has been a hot head coaching name for the last couple of years, certainly as the 49ers have really come on, not just with Kyle Shanahan's offense, but how they have played on defense as well. So we'll give a little bit of a background into Saleh, and then we can get into what the team might look like under him moving forward. Started his career as an intern with the Houston Texans back in 2005 and worked his way up all the way up to being a quality control position with the Houston Texans in the late 2000s. He then went over to Seattle to have that same position as a quality control coach from 2011 to 2013 under Dan Quinn and Gus Bradley. Now, this is where I think his coaching tree really began, because when Bradley moved over to be the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, he brought Saleh with him. And Saleh was his linebackers coach from 2014 to 2016. Then after that, became defense coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, and he put together one of the best defenses in the NFL. I mean, they went from, this is DVOA's rankings from Football Outsiders. They were 26th his first year in 2017. They were 24th the year after that in 2018, and then they jumped all the way up to second, and then sixth this season. So, like, under him, you've got to be able to give a defensive coordinator and a new coach time to get, quote-unquote, their guys in the building. And holy cow, when he got his guys in the building, they took a leap in efficiency into one of the best defenses in the NFL. And I think that was the biggest part of his resume for him becoming a head coach and a lot of people being excited about him in New York.
What Saleh does, the impact Saleh has on defensive acquisitions will be fascinating, because I think you can look at this Jets offense and say, okay, I mean, obviously quarterback's a need, but we already know we're going there with three, so don't worry about it. Obviously running back's a need. Okay, put that off to the side. Offensive line's not half bad. They probably are going to want to add to the interior. I don't know if they're bringing Pat Elflein back or not. I don't know if they want to improve on Alex Lewis and Greg Van Roten, but you could go in to next season with that interior and be fine. Maybe you want to improve upon it. That's cool. Pass catcher, again, you can improve upon this. There's no part of the Jets roster that I'm going to argue is good, but you're set with Jamison Crowder and Denzel Mims as two of your starters. You want to bring a third starter in, and you can realistically invest highly in that spot. You can go there with your second first-round pick. You can go there with big money for Allen Robinson or Kenny Golladay. Cool. Defensively, I argued after the Greg Williams firing, and I kind of watched through this Jets roster and the Jets defensive snaps, that they were like, they got talent. Like, they're ready. Like, there's parts of this defensive roster that I would argue is actually good, right? Like, this defensive tackle room is nuts. Quinnen Williams, Nathan Shepard, Henry Anderson, Foley Fatukasi. John Franklin Myers as a situational interior rusher. It's great. Edge is horrible, right? Corner. Safety, right? I mean, Ashton Davis and Marcus May, who I'm assuming they're going to bring back in free agency as a solid starting safety duo.
Right.
They have to re-sign Brian Poole, but they got good play out of Bryce Hall this season. I think you're comfortable with him being a corner too, one of your depth pieces. Bradley McDougal is going to be your nickel player as well. Like, this is... there's good stuff here that's going on. And what we saw from Saleh in San Francisco was taking a Seattle cover three, you know, 4-3 under front background and transitioning it into playing more too high and playing more quarters, playing more safety rotation, playing with corners off of the ball a little bit. I'm confident that Saleh is going to come and be able to adjust what he does relative to the defensive personnel that already exists with the Jets. So I think that you're going to see him maximize Quinnen Williams as an elite pass rushing three technique, which he never, he had with DeForest Buckner completely differently, right? Like DeForest, what was so good about DeForest was his movement ability, right? You move him all across the line of scrimmage because he's so long, he's so athletic. Quinnen's like a true build of a three technique. It's a different style of player. You're going to use him differently. You're not going to have the elite corner play that you were getting from Richard Sherman. That's going to change the way that you're able to call defense. So I'm confident he's going to make adjustments relative to defensive personnel. But Jakiski Tartt's a free agent. Kerry Hyder's a free agent. Akella Witherspoon's a free agent. Jimmy Ward's a free agent. Jason Verrett's a free agent. Richard Sherman's a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
The whole San Francisco defense, most of the secondary, is going to be available. It's interesting to me to think about that middle ground and how much of Saleh's defense in New York will be based off what they currently have, what they can do well. Run defense is tremendous. They got good two gappers up front. And what he did well in San Francisco and some of the players that he can bring to install that. I liked this defensive roster before Saleh was the hire. I'm even more excited about it now that Saleh is the hire. When you have $66 million in cap space, whatever the frick it is, you have the ability to really round this thing out. You have the ability to bring in, potentially, Sherman as your top-flight corner if you think he still has those legs. Jason Verrett as your top-flight corner if he's able to get out of San Francisco. You have the ability to bring in, I don't really think they need Jakiski Tartt because they already have a good safety room, but you have the ability to bring in Jakiski Tartt, put him as a quasi-linebacker, and play with quarters coverage with all your versatile safeties and be successful there. You can bring some of these San Francisco things. So this, I don't want to say this because it's going to be recorded and it's going to be published. I think this Jets defense is going to be like actually good next year. I have that degree of confidence in current personnel, the combined efforts of Douglas and Saleh to round out the rough edges and plug the remaining gaps, that I think regardless of the youth that you've got to deal with, and you need a new quarterback, you need a new running back, you need wide receiver, I think the Jets defense is going to be good in 2021. Are they going to win a lot of games? I think it's going to be a good defense.
I think there's a chance it's a good defense simply because I think
It's going to be a good defense.
Saul is a good defensive mind. And look, I'm glad that you're putting it on. You're putting it on him right now. The part that worries me a ton is the edge rush group. Okay. Because I think that winning up front is so big for what the 49ers were able to do successfully over the last 2 years. And while I was researching what Saleh's defenses were all about, Grant Cohen did a really fantastic job over at Fan Nation outlining it, and he kind of talked about how when Saleh came over from the Jacksonville Jaguars, it was from that Dan Quinn, Gus Bradley tree. So, right, it was in the early 2010s running single high cover three was great. You know, like you get the right personnel and you get the right secondary to run that kind of like cover three defense. And that was just stopping offenses like that. You could create a dominant defense with that as your base. But when it came to 2017, 2018, I mean, we were getting into more of the modern age of offense where offenses are kind of trying to figure stuff out. So he was doing the whole, you know, you're putting five defensive linemen on the line, you're playing cover three in the back, and his defenses in 2017 and 2018 were great at defending the run, but quarterbacks were just shredding them left to right because of what they were doing in their spot drop zone coverage, playing cover three. It was just an outdated kind of defense. So in 2019, hired defensive line coach, oh man, I'm going to butcher this guy's last name, Chris
Korachek.
Korachek. I would say
I looked it up at some point, and because I didn't know how to say it either, and then I was like, dang. Kosarek. According to 49ers.com, Kosarek. So we were kind of close in the sense that we were nowhere near it at all.
I didn't even take a stab at it. You did. So I'm just going to say that you were wrong. But anyways, In 2019, he changes things up. So instead of having five guys on the defensive line all the time, he emphasizes four. But he kind of installs this wider edge front to where these edge rushers are constantly attacking the pocket from a wider alignment, which is spacing them out a little bit more, which is getting those four defensive guys on the line instead of five. So this could obviously give him more in the defensive backfield, and they were using cover three, but also throwing in their cover four as well. They weren't as predictable with what they were doing in their zone coverage. And so that's something that really was able to change their defense. Of course, they got a lot of really good players. They had DeForest Buckner. They had Arik Armstead. They had Nick Bosa, okay? Like, you need those guys to win with four, and that's what they were doing. They were winning with four. But they had the horses, if you will, the guys up front. They had the linebacker in Fred Warner. They had good linebackers there, and then they had a defense that was keeping things, I'll at least just say, it was keeping quarterbacks guessing than it was before, and that vaulted their defense into top five in so many different categories. But they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. Why? Because the Kansas City Chiefs eventually figured out after the pass rush was getting wary and the game was going on that they could simply get the ball to their guys in one-on-one situations and they would be able to win. The San Francisco 49ers, for as much as they changed things zone-wise, they were not able to get to a total switch-up of running zone and man, like not knowing exactly what the coverage was doing at any given point. So going into 2020, ended up hiring Tony Oden. He's more of a man-to-man cover specialist who joined the San Francisco 49ers staff, who was then able to introduce a little bit more man coverage packages so the secondary could be a lot more in disguise. You just weren't sure where they were going to be, what kind of coverage they were going to deploy. And so all of that was very encouraging to me because it showed me that Saleh was paying attention to the NFL as it was evolving when he realized that something that he was doing was not working. Of course, once he got his hands on a defense for the first time as a defense coordinator, he was willing to change it. He was willing to do things differently.
And many DCs don't change anything ever for all of God-given time?
We talked about that with Brandon Saleh, that why he was a great hire for the Los Angeles Rams for that very reason, because he looked at the rest of the league and he went, okay, offenses are evolving in this way. I need to now evolve my defense in another way. And so I think that that's a very encouraging part of him being a head coach. But that also brings to me, when I look at this Jets defense, I think that they got some decent players, and I think that they have the chance to be I'll say a good defense. Right now, this is a 3-4 defense. Like, it was built as a 3-4 base. And I think that they have some players that will make the transition, but Saleh is a 4-3 guy, and I think that that's what he is going to want to continue to be. He's going to want to put four defensive linemen on the line. That's kind of the defense that he was building in San Francisco. I think that it's going to be somewhat similar with the Jets. And with that being said, they not only didn't have the edge rushers for a 3-4 that they were trying to build, they don't have the edge rushers for a 4-3. They've got the interior guys. They've got some really nice guys who could play nose and some players who, shoot, I mean, we're getting Quinn Williams in a full-time 3-tech role. I mean, I really love the idea of that, getting him in some one-on-one situations to penetrate from the interior. But they need edge rushers, and they need edge rushers bad. Like, that is a paramount part of what a Saleh defense is going to be built around, I believe. So not only do they have secondary needs at corner, I think that that edge rusher is something that they really have to throw a lot of resources at, whether it's in free agency or the draft or the next year or two, because that is going to be where things really get to kickstart and we get to see this team get turned around.
Yes, I 100% agree. I think that you can't, I'm going to say a thing that I disagree with. You can hide corners in this system. You actually can't. You can't hide corners in any system. If you have a bad corner, they're going to find
them. Why would you say that? Then why would you say it?
Because I think when you play quarters, it's easier to help your corners relative to if you're playing like true spot drop cover three or okay, Seattle cover
three.
That
makes sense. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You can afford them more help. So I think that I'll put it to you this way. Do I want like Richard Sherman playing on my team in 2021? Not really. Like Sherm's great, but obviously he's us kind of on the end here a little bit. The Jets have money they can throw at him, and he knows the system. I think they're going to make an offer for Sherman. I don't think Sherman, San Francisco doesn't have the money to pay him. So I think they're going to pay him probably more money than he's worth, and he's going to pay, and he's going to help the young guys. He's going to be great for Bryce Hall, great for Bless One Austin, whatever. Cool. You can kind of deal with corner like that, and you know it's going to be a long arc for you trying to figure out that position. What you can't screw around with is edge. And I would add, you need a Fred Warner. Warner solved so many problems. I had so many people tell me about like, oh, you say there's no model for what the Chiefs to stop the Chiefs offense. What about the Niners in the Super Bowl? Yeah, Fred Warner's the only person who's ever covered Travis Kelce in the last 2 years. You have a Fred Warner? You don't. He's so good. So you need to look seriously at adding pass rushers. A high side rusher is critical. You need an outside guy, right? Like people have talked about Matt Judon, and I like it. But also, Judon's a good power rusher. I want a rusher with speed. I want a rusher who can win from a stand, win from the outside. If Shaq Barrett reaches the market, which we've talked about, probably maybe not. If Bud Dupree reaches the market, which I think is a little bit more possible, Melvin Ingram's another interesting name in this regard, Yannick Ngakoue. These are the sort of players that I think you add and you're successful. I would like to see them bring in Kerry Hyder, who I think played himself into a decently sized contract with his performance in San Francisco. So those are the guys that I'm going after. Linebacker is the tricky one because you look at off-ball linebacker this year.
Will they get CJ Mosley back, remember?
Okay, but Mosley in coverage has never been what Fred Warner is.
No, well, obviously not. Fred Warner is rare. But I just wanted to say they get CJ Mosley back this year because he opted out before the season. So I just wanted to make sure everybody remembered that.
When I look for that guy who's gonna, you know, wall and match two, who's gonna wall short cross, who's gonna rob underneath the dig, like all the important stuff when you're trying to attack that middle of the field, I don't see that player currently on this roster. With your safety depth, I'd love to say it's like Marcus May and you play Ashton Davis on the roof. I think May is a good player. I don't think he's that player, certainly when it comes to dealing with players of size. That's the thing about Warner, going back to the Travis Kelce point, is that he can stick with quickness and he can stick with slot receivers and he's got such good zone vision and everything. But then when a quarterback just chooses to throw him covered, Warner has the size and the length to deal with big receivers, to deal with tight end bodies. I don't think you have that in Marcus May. It doesn't exist on the free agent market. It's a weak year for linebackers regardless. Avery Williamson, Denzel Perryman, Thomas Davis, Sean Lee, you know, Devondre Campbell, KJ Wright, if he makes it, is interesting because he's always been really good at that technically. KJ's also going to be 33. Mm-hmm. Not as quick as it used to be.
Yeah, I was just about to say they're interesting, and we're going to get to I'll bring in some other details about free agency in a second, but like they're in a weird situation where how much do they want to get better in the short term versus like how much are they going to just say, okay, this is a 3-year rebuild. Like we're not going to throw money at guys just to like win one or two extra games. I mean, maybe it's what they want to do, but I looked at free agency as well. And there are a couple of guys who I went, oh, okay, they could be interested in this guy, but I mean, like he's over 30. So is he even going to be around or matter by the time he can compete?
Also, I will say this. If KJ makes it to free agency, which I'm not sure he will, but if he does, I do think the Jets, make the push. Saleh played him twice a year, and Saleh knows how smart he is. You know what I mean? Like, I would not be surprised at all if it's KJ wearing green with the Jets on, like, a short-term deal. Because I think Saleh will like him, and I think Saleh knows he's smart. It's just athletically, he's You're going to like having him, and he's going to be helpful, but you're going to want to improve upon him. The thing with the Jets, they've got money to throw around. Like, why not just be the biggest offer on KJ? He's going to cost you $7 million, $8 million. That's max. Sure, do it. 2 years? He's going to be huge for your young guys? Absolutely. So he plays till he's 35. He's still going to be smart. He's still super physical.
Sure.
He just is not as quick as he used to be. But sometimes you got to sign 30-year-olds and just kind of tie yourself over. So to me, like, I think KJ Wright's probably the best option they've got for that. Mm-hmm. But when I look at how I would want to build this defense out and fill the gaps, and look at Salah's background, I do think it is going to be first level to second level to third level. I think corner will be the last thing that they get to. I think edge is where you expect them to spend the big money this year.
We'll pop over to offense to talk about that for a second. But before we get there, we got one more big NFL game going on. NBA is in full swing. NHL's already dropped the puck. There's sports all over the place. And if whatever sport you are following closely, if you think you know absolutely who is going to win one way or the other, and you want to put some money on the line, there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up for a free account today over at betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, no spaces, LOCKEDON, for your 50% welcome bonus. NFL games, NBA games, MLB games, when they end up getting started as well, don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON, and you will get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before we fully get into free agency, I guess this is kind of marrying the two topics here because we blended it a little bit. I wanted to mention that they also brought over Michael Floor, who was the pass game coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, now to be the offensive coordinator under Salah. So he was able to take him out from under Kyle Shanahan's wing. There's plenty of things that they could upgrade on the offense. They need extra playmakers in the passing game. Oh, good Lord, they need more offensive linemen. Basically any spot that's not Mekhi Becton. They love a good pass-catching tight end. If somebody could step up on the roster, great. They probably need to add one, though. So I just wanted to mention that Mike LaFleur, another San Francisco familiar face, is also going to be making the jump over, and that's going to go into kind of what we talk about here with potential free agency. Jets, as of right now, second most projected salary cap in 2021, just behind the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're projected to have about $65 million in cap space to spend. But as Ben mentioned already on the podcast, they do have some guys that are up that played a lot of snaps and significant snaps for them over the last couple of years. Marcus May is the big one. He had the most coverage snaps as a safety. They've got to re-sign him, but I think that they will. Brian Poole, the starting nickel cornerback, I think they got to bring him back as well. Like you said, if they bring back Marcus May, Brian Poole, Bryce Hall was playing pretty well down the stretch. Then all of a sudden, yes, they have a glaring need at probably a corner one, like a dominant CB1, but you've got the other pieces around him once you can get that player. Jordan Jenkins, linebacker, had the second most pass rush snaps for anybody on the team. And then Terrell Basham had the most pass rush snaps. They're both unrestricted free agents. Also, Bradley McDougal is in there. Breshad Perryman, the wide receiver who just signed a one-year deal. Frank Gore and Joe Flacco, who are two veteran backup guys there. Well, Flacco actually got a little bit of starting action that season. But when it comes to those linebacker spots, with both of those guys being there, the number one and the... Actually, I think it's the number one and the number three. I don't think Jenkins was second. I think it was one and three. So these are the first and third ranked players on your roster in terms of most pass rush snaps, and yet this is also a group that was ranked in the bottom 20 in the NFL with just 21 sacks. So that's not where you want to be, even for the guys that are available. So I'm over here thinking, like, Jordan Jenkins, he's more of a 3-4 outside linebacker pass rusher kind of a player. Terrell Basham could be the same way. So even though you want to fill your roster out with good players, how much are you bringing these guys back if you're switching up the system to going more to a 3-4 or what Salah is very used to? So, yeah, these guys, you could say, like, yeah, we got to bring them back. We've got the space to do it. Let's do it. Is that what you want to do? I'm not so sure, especially in a free agency class that has a lot of guys to look at. When I looked at the free agent targets, a wide receiver is a big one that they have to look at. You've got to look at bringing in a dominant wide receiver one to the team. Allen Robinson, likely going to be available. I don't think Chris Godwin's getting out of Tampa Bay, but he is scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent as well. Kenny Golladay is going to get the hell out of there now. So, like, whatever we thought Kenny Golladay might have a chance to move back to Detroit with Matthew Stafford gone, I really don't think that Kenny Golladay is going back to Detroit. So those are three wide receivers that I could definitely see them being interested in. And then when it comes to those edge rushers, you know, you look at the guys who are available, and you got Melvin Ingram, but he's over 32. Bud Dupree, do you want to spend all the money on Bud Dupree? I'm not so sure. Matthew Judon, he's more of an outside linebacker, kind of a pass rusher. Shaq Barrett can be a full-time 4-3 pass rusher, I think. He's 29 years old. And then Yannick Ngakoue, full-time 4-3 pass rusher, who is only 26 years old. But, I mean, I don't know. Ngakoue's been a little bit weird over the last year and a half with what's gone on and how outspoken that he's been. You'd probably have to do a nice little background check on him and make sure that he wants to be in New York because he's wanted out of a couple of different situations. But those are two guys that I'd look at. I think if you got Ngakoue and Kenny Golladay in the building for the New York Jets, I mean, I think that that'd be almost a home run of a free agency. So, like, that's those are two of the guys that I go after for the big splash players, that is.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd be curious to see if they can get Kenny. I think Kenny, I wouldn't. I mean, like, once you get maybe Justin Fields slash Zach Wilson, you're like, yeah, we're good. We like, you know, then you're going to get that big money wide receiver. So, right, you go after Kenny, you go after A-Rob. I think that that's, I think I would want to go mature wide receiver so that I can be certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that I have at least one really good target for Fields slash Wilson, as opposed to going like Fields, Bateman, going, you know, Wilson, Kadarius Toney, and walking in there with Jameson, Bateman, Mims. And obviously, if you think Crowder's a good slot option, he can be a consistent guy for you, but you really don't have that dynamic threat, that deep threat, right? That's not really Crowder's game. So I would want to go wide receiver in free agency. I think they're going to throw a bag at Joe Tooney. They tried to last year, right? Like, they were just waiting. They were like, all right, free agency is going to open. We're going to give Joe Tooney $75 million. Here we go. Joe Tooney. And then there was that last second franchise tag, which nobody really saw coming from the Patriots. They were at the same spot this year where it's expected that Joe Tooney's going to hit the market. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets try to go aggressively after him. Like I said, they've got the money to do so. They obviously started trying to solve their interior problem this year, so it may not be as pressing of an issue as it looked last season. But I think Tooney's going to be high on their list. I think that they would still go after Melvin Ingram. I think Ingram's a good option for their wide rusher. I hear you in terms of like hand in the dirt slash stand up, right? But you like play him in the D forward role.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about that as I am about like just him being 32. Like I don't know if Joe Douglas is going to just make a splash to make a splash. Maybe he's going to. Maybe they're going to be all in on it. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know if he's going to want to pay Ingram a 3-year contract just to get like the three lower years of his career just to like get a guy in there.
I'm positive they're going to sign Kerry Hyder. I know that for sure. This is not the splash edge that they wanted, but I think that if Kerry makes it to the free agent market, they'll go after him.
Okay,
and then right, I do think a big money edge is also expected. I would expect them to sign Richard Sherman, and I think that's going to be kind of the bulk of their big moves. Top wide receiver, top edge. I think they're going to bring in Sherm. I think that Joe Douglas is probably going to still check in on the Joe Tooney market. I don't know if it's going to be as serious as it was, but they were there last year. There's no reason they wouldn't be there this year. He's still a great player.
You think Sherm's going to want to go East Coast? I just wonder about that, too. Like, I wonder, because I think in a vacuum, it can make sense. He gets to play with the same defense coordinator that he's been with the last couple of years. It's made his transition from Seattle very successful because it's a similar situation, and he understands Sherman. But Sherman's obviously in the twilight part of his career. He's been a West Coast guy his whole life. Now he's moving from Seattle back down to California and San Francisco. Is he going to want to go all the way to New York?
Do you think Sherm wants to go play where Revis played? Sherman wants to play with the Jets?
I don't know if that's in his mind. I mean, you know what? These guys are so high. You're right.
Come on.
He's so highly
Richard Sherman.
I don't know if
you guys have been beefing for years.
I don't know. I feel like that'd be weird for him. Don't you? Because the other cornerback that's on the market is Patrick Peterson, but again, like, you would need to sign Pat Pete to be your CB1 over the next couple of years, and I'm just not sure that they're going to
be Sherman knows the system, man. He knows Saleh. Absolutely. The New York media market for Sherman, too? Come on. I think Sherman would do it.
I don't know. I don't know if he would. I think that regardless, wide receiver...
Just hear in your head right now. And with that interception, Richard Sherman now has 7 picks on the year, beating the single season record previously set by Darrelle Revis for the franchise of 6 interceptions.
Whoa.
Like, Kate, like, just how much fun that would be. I think he would do it.
That's Buccaneer great, Darrelle Revis, that you're talking about there.
That's true.
I also don't know how much they're going to look. I'm on the train with everybody saying that they need to upgrade offensive line basically in every spot that's not Mekhi Becton, but I think they'd look after Thuney. I agree with you. I think that they'd look at him.
Is it Thuney or Tooney?
Oh, it might be Tooney.
I'm pretty sure it's Tooney, like the Canadian coin.
Okay. All right.
Joseph
Tooney.
Joe.
Big Joe. I'm just going to call him Boss Man the rest of the podcast so I don't have to mess up his last name. So they can go after Boss Man if they want, but
yeah.
No, and right, I think that's smart.
Right. Like they did it last year. How much, like, do they really like what Elflein did? Because Pat Elflein played better to end the season. They've got Connor McGovern, they got Lewis, they got Gregory Monroe. Like, they have bodies. It's just obviously none of them are top flight guys. Like, Bossman's viewed as a top flight guy. There is one position.
Bossman.
There's one position that I do want to bring up that we didn't, which I would be curious to see where Selah and Douglas fall on this, because Douglas spent 3 years in Philadelphia with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. And Sir Robert Saleh is coming from San Francisco, where George Kittle was the answer to a lot of things on that offense. You don't really have a top tight end prospect in this free agent group unless Hunter Henry makes it, which is interesting. In the event that Henry's available, I would not be surprised if the Jets decide, you know what, tight ends are always good for young quarterbacks because they're usually those underneath options. If they're going to run that LaFleur Shanahan offense, then you need to have a successful H-back at the very least, if not having multiple good tight ends. You look at San Francisco putting Kittle and Dwelly and Juszczyk all on the field. You look at LaFleur and the Packers putting Mercedes Lewis and Robert Tonyan on the field. You look at Arthur Smith with multiple tight ends in Tennessee. This is usually the approach, is you want to have multiple bodies. Right now for the Jets, it's just Chris Herndon. And even then, Chris Herndon hasn't necessarily been that exciting as far as what they got out of Miami. I would not be surprised if Hunter Henry makes it to New York in the event that he hits the market. If he doesn't, Gerald Everett is an interesting one because he's coming from the Rams and he's coming from that approach. He's been using it before. He has that wide receiver like ability, but he can still be a good blocker. Jordan Reed, another San Francisco free agent, 31, super banged up, but he can be valuable. I think that they'll look at the tight end market and make at least one big name hire. Maybe not a big money hire, but at least a big name hire. And then we start to get to the draft. And if the tight end board falls to them, I wouldn't be surprised if they prioritize that position as well.
So, okay, we went over a lot of guys that they could look at. What's your pecking order? Like, what's your power ranking of positions that they should go through? Because they got $65 million, but as we went over, I think they'll bring back Marcus May. I think they'll bring back Brian Poole. I don't know how for certain you would bring back Jordan Jenkins or Jarrell Basham, especially if you're trying to change the system. You're getting
my number one position is edge. The position, if I could only sign one position for the Jets, it would be edge.
I agree.
Next would be wide receiver.
I agree with you.
So that to me, those are the two where it's like, if you don't get like with all this money, a high quality veteran expected multi-year starter at these positions to immediately solve issues that have plagued your organization for multiple years, what are you doing with your money? Edge, especially with a really good, I think, edge group coming up, and then wide receiver, once again, with a very good free agent group coming up. Those are my two spots.
I would tell you edge is one for me, wide receiver is two, and then offensive line is three. Like, if you can get an offensive lineman that makes sense, then I think that's smart, especially with a handful of picks in the top 50 where you can go, okay, we have Mekhi Becton on the left side. We're adding a veteran interior offensive lineman. Let's say it is Boss Man over from the New England Patriots, and then we're adding another offensive lineman that we really like in the top 50. That all of a sudden makes things a lot different. You know, that changes the outlook of the offensive line situation no matter who is playing quarterback, which we're going to have a conversation of who might be playing quarterback for them in a second once we get to the three-round draft portion of it. But before that, I got to announce to everybody that we are, in fact, going with a sixth Fast and Furious movie, folks. Ben did it. He broke the record, the world record. His movie reboot, believe it or not, sold more tickets than Avengers Endgame. Can you believe it, Ben? Yeah, it's all Chris Evans.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you consider what I've done, making the whole Fast and Furious reboot franchise, then subsequently immediately rebooting the reboot of the Fast and Furious franchise, I'm not surprised that Chris Evans, soft and a coward, that's right, I said it. Listen to these words, Chris.
But you got to keep going.
Yes. I'm not surprised.
You got to keep it going. Now you got to finish out the whole reboot of the reboot series. So you got another movie coming up. As always, you do your own stunts because, look, you like to show off your old school like that. And in
unlike
doing so,
soft, cowardly Chris Evans.
Yeah, you do your own stunts, right? Right. Yeah. You're not a coward and you're not soft. But your car is at this point because it's completely totaled because, again, you felt like using your own car because you wanted to make it as realistic as possible. That's why it's that kind of commitment and mindset that makes you one of the most highest-selling actors of all time. But you got to get a new car now. Now you're in a situation where you need a brand new car again. You got to build one yourself. If you were to do that, if you were to get a decently sized budget to do so, where would you go to start your search for anything auto part needs?
I would go the one place where soft and cowardly actors are known not to, the one place that doesn't accept soft and cowardly actors.
Of course.
RockAuto.com.
RockAuto.com. Folks, it's a family business serving non-cowardly and soft actors online for over 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com. Use the, use the promo code, but we're not to that point yet. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for any kind of auto or body parts from hundreds of different manufacturers. Whether you are soft and cowardly like Chris Evans, or whether you are an old school, do-it-yourself, strong, strapping young lad like Benjamin Solak. Whatever you're driving, whether it's an upgrade or whether it's a fix to whatever your vehicle is, RockAuto.com has got you. Go to RockAuto.com and you can look on the left side of the website. You can see all of the different parts that they have for all of their different vehicles. It's super easy to navigate. Guarantee you'll be able to find exactly what you need. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts that are available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On NFL Draft in the How Did You Hear About Us little section so they know that we sent you over there. They got an amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you were ever going to need. Over at RockAuto.com. It's drafting time. And Ben, I have a confession.
Hit me.
I am coming around.
No.
To the idea.
No.
Of the New York Jets and their best strategy moving forward to trade number 2 overall.
And start Sam?
And start Sam Bradford.
You're outside your melon, son.
I think the more that I was reading about Robert Saleh's defenses and what they want to do on offense as well with Mike LaFleur, I think they are a long way away. And to quote you at the beginning of the podcast, they have so many things that they have to fill. And with having 2 first-round picks already in this draft and next draft, knowing that if they trade number 2 overall and move back even to, say, number 8 with Carolina, but even more so if you move from number 12 with San Francisco or the Patriots at 15, or even more so if you move down to the teams that are over in the 20s, you're going to get 3 first-round picks next year, 3 first-round picks the year after that, and probably 2 first-round picks the year after that. I mean, like, you're just setting yourself up to build this team the way you want to build them. And Joe Douglas has said many, many times, the way we will build this franchise is through the draft. It's not going to be through free agency. And I just wonder, of course, because the quarterback is the most important position, and they're sitting here number 2 overall, and they probably need a quarterback, and there's quarterbacks, so there's good ones to pick from. I just wonder if the window would set up for them a little bit better if they made this move and picked up a lot of heavy draft capital over the next 3 years.
You got to argue me right now that you, with confidence, there's going to be a better quarterback available in the 2022 NFL draft than Wilson or Fields right now.
I can't.
So what are we talking about?
2 years from now, DJ Uiagalelei. Wow, there it is. Setting up perfectly.
Listen,
I was on the recruiting forums a couple weeks ago, and I saw that there's this 13-year-old kid who's lighting it up in middle school.
I can't even tell if I'm being serious or not. If you want to make the argument that it is a multi-year rebuild, they have the opportunity to sell this at a ransom. They already have multiple extra firsts because of Jamal Adams, but whatever. So sell it at a ransom, get a ton more bigger picks, and then wash this year with Darnold and say, we're going to go after quarterback next year.
What if Darnold's good?
That's what it is. Nobody would bring up this idea if there wasn't still this residual, oh, I saw a highlight of Sam Darnold making a good throw off platform, and so he's good.
Adam Gase is head coach behind the worst offensive line in America.
He was overrated as a prospect. I had a round two grade on him because he wasn't good in his final season at USC. He wasn't good as a rookie. He wasn't good as a sophomore. He wasn't good as a junior, all in the NFL.
Well, how's it going to get better if he's got a trash offensive line with trash offensive weapons with trash head coach?
I don't know. If he were, like, just bad, if you were just playing badly, I shouldn't even say that. If we were acknowledging the extent of the badness that he individually played with, and I'll get to Gase in a second, nobody would be like, oh, but maybe they can sell it and another year of Sam Darnold. It's this retained faith in what Darnold was as a prospect, where everybody was so excited about him coming out for some reason because he was good as a freshman, that this idea continues to be excused. And okay, you say, all right, Gase ruined him, and Gase is bad. Gase. Yes, I agree. But whether or not it was Gase that ruined Darnold, or Darnold was never going to be good, or the wide receivers were whatever, and the protection gave him this, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, this is what you have now. New general manager, new head coach. What you've got is a quarterback with 3 years of NFL experience under his belt who has not played well, who has bad habits. You're never, never going to get a good quarterback under pressure out of Sam Darnold. It's not going to happen. There's far too much evidence that he cannot script a good response to pressure. Because for 3 years, whether his fault or somebody else's fault, he has been broken. His response to pressure has been habituated, and it is poor. And that's not going away. New system, new coaches, new weapons, not going away. So, yes, put Darnold in the Ryan Tannehill role for the Titans and for that offense, you know, just everything is a play action shot, and we're going to throw 10,000 wide receiver screens like Kyle Shanahan, and he's never going to have to do a day of processing in his life. Sure, he's going to look better. His numbers are going to look better. Wonder where San Francisco is right now, Trev? They're trying to figure out if they can replace Jimmy Garoppolo, because making a Frankenstein quarterback seem viable, giving him life, enervating him, just puts you in a situation 2 years down the road where you discover you're capped when you get to the playoffs and every other quarterback he faces is better than him. So you cannot be putting faith in Sam Darnold. We have to move beyond this as a country, as a nation. It's time for unity. The unity is that we all agree that Sam was a good prospect, but maybe we were a little bit too confident in his arm talent, his off-platform throwing ability, and now it's time for the Jets to move on. My voice is tired because I've been yelling. Thank you.
Oh, man. That was perfect. whether or not I even actually believe that they
agreed,
should trade number two overall.
Or listened to it.
Yeah, right, look, whether or not I even believe it, me winding you up like a toy and then just having you absolutely go off made it absolutely worth it. So, okay, we won't trade number two overall, okay?
You're dang straight we won't.
We will keep number two overall. And because of your energy and passion that you put into that speech there, I will give you control of which quarterback the Jets are taking at number two overall in our little three-round mock that we are going to do. So let's be under the assumption that the Jets added Kenny Golladay, also added, you want to say Shaq Barrett or Yannick Ngakoue? Either one. One of the top edge rushers. So
Shaq's your boy. You tell me.
I don't think that Shaq's leaving Tampa. I really don't.
Okay.
So let's say Yannick, and like Yannick is actually happy. Like Yannick actually wants to be there, and he's going to play inspired, and they expect to get good things out of him. So they've got Kenny Golladay as wide receiver one. They have Yannick Ngakoue as the pass rusher that they got. They're adding CJ Mosley again to the roster after he opted out there. They're not bringing back Terrell Basham or Jordan Jenkins, but they did bring back Marcus May and Brian Poole, as well as some other depth guys, but they're not as important for a three-round mock draft. So here we go. Number two overall, Trevor Lawrence going number one. Who we picking?
To me, this is still Fields. Has been Fields from the beginning. I like the way Wilson's played. I don't think that he's gotten to a point where he's markedly above Justin Fields, comfortably above Fields. I hear the arguments that he is a better scheme fit. Justin Fields ran outside zone boot from pistol. Wilson ran under gun. You know what I mean? Like, it's, if it's just gun footwork we're talking about, or pistol and under center footwork, excuse me, then to me, that's not a strong enough argument. I would still make this pick as Justin Fields.
Okay, so now we're up at number 23. Some guys that we have on the board, Christian Darrisaw is here. Interesting, because he was a left tackle guy, but could you kick him over to right to have a really good 1-2 connection at offensive tackle? Also, Travis Etienne is here. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, talk about playmaking at linebacker. Jalen Mayfield, Alex Leatherwood, Kadarius Toney, if you're looking at wide receiver. Azeez Ojulari, if you want another edge rusher opposite Yannick Ngakoue. They have Eric Stokes, if you think that he is good enough to be a cornerback one in the NFL. What do you think about this pick here with the guys that are on the board?
What's the best wide receiver we've got available? I see Terrace Marshall just left. It's Toney.
Yeah, Kadarius Toney's still there. Amon-Ra St. Brown is next. Nico Collins, Rondale Moore.
So wide receiver didn't fall nicely to us. We have Shaq Barrett in hand. We could very easily go for a secondary edge.
No, we got Yannick.
We have Yannick in hand. But... listeners of the pod know very well by this point that I'm pro Azeez Ojulari in the first round. Azeez is...
I would tell you, if you want me to put this up to two players and then have you decide, I would say Christian Darrisaw or Azeez Ojulari.
They got George Pham for big money for 2 years, man. And Chuma Adoga as well. I don't think they need tackle. Darrisaw's a good player, don't get me wrong. I just don't think they need tackle like that.
I mean, are we building a good team or are we building a good team?
It is Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas, I'll play Christian Darrisaw at center. I don't care. You know, off at the line, baby.
That's fine. I'm more than happy going Azeez Ojulari to give them extra edge pressure because
people got to realize how
paramount it is to get pressure with four.
Right. No, I think you want another edge to fix this room.
Okay.
Right? Because it's more than just one. And yeah, Jordan Jenkins, Terrell Bashir, these guys don't really move the needle too much for me.
Well, we didn't bring him back in this situation anyway. So
yeah, exactly.
Now it's Ngakoue and Ojulari on the edges with Quinnen Williams sitting there at the three tech, which I'm now very happy with along the front. 34. Wide receiver. Ooh, okay. Kadarius Toney's gone. Amon-Ra St. Brown is gone. Asante Samuel Jr. is gone at corner. Wyatt Davis is gone at interior offensive line. Rondale Moore is still there. Nico Collins. Who's there at corner? Tyson Campbell's the next best corner that's there. Running back. Who we got at running back? Could use a running back upgrade. Travis Etienne is still there. Javonte Williams obviously still there. Tight end. Pat Freiermuth and Brevin Jordan are both still there.
Etienne's tempting to me, man. They got to add a decent running back pick here. I don't think you want to go after a free agent. And Travis's, like, I finished Etienne's film the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I was not as impressed as I wanted to be. TBH.
I didn't think so. Did you watch his 2020, you mean?
Yes.
2020, he just didn't feel like the same guy.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's still the home run speed, right? It's still, they're going to be a power blocking team up front as well. Like, I still think ETN might be the pick for me here. What's the full board again, if you don't mind?
Would you rather have Javonte Williams over Travis Etienne or no?
I really like Javonte Williams. I don't think so, though.
Okay. You're thinking just because of the home run speed ability?
Because of the speed, both have the question marks as pass catchers as well. You know what I mean? Like Javonte, it wasn't a big part of his game. It was so much more Michael Carter for them. Mm-hmm. We don't need to go edge. We already solved that. Offensive line's really deep. Linebacker, maybe. But to me, Etienne's probably the best player left on this board.
Scanning it to see if there's really anybody that I would rather have. I mean, maybe Landon Dickerson.
Oh, I mean, it'd be fun. But again,
I really wouldn't hate that.
Landon's interesting. This is early for him, though. 34, coming off a major injury.
I think I'd go Landon Dickerson here. I really would.
All right, let's do it. We're confident we can get Javonte later.
I don't know if we're confident, but we'll see. Landon Dickerson. So we went Justin Fields, Azeez Ojulari, Landon Dickerson. We're going trenches and quarterback. We're changing the culture here with the New York Jets. Their next pick is, 66.
Yeah, because they don't have an extra second. They have an extra one and an extra three.
Right. So we're sitting here at 66. Now we're on the clock, running this obviously through the Draft Network's mock draft machine.
Javonte Williams is still there.
Javonte Williams is still there.
Yes,
and
sir.
And Michael Carter. You want to go with Javonte? I think that's smart.
Let's check the full board real quick. But I would imagine I want Javonte here at 66.
Okay. Hamilcar Rashid, the edge rusher, is there. Josh Myers is still there, but we already picked Landon Dickerson. Jabril Cox is there for linebacker.
Right. Jabril Cox now is like, if we're going to make a let's get a long, rangy, really good cover linebacker, sure.
They also pick at 86. I mean, is Javonte here over Jabril Cox worth it over waiting for a running back and getting like a Michael Carter or a Trey Sermon or Kenneth Gainwell or somebody like that? I might rather have Jabril Cox here.
You have tempted me. I think it's Jabril Cox, right?
I think so too.
Catching the end of a run here. Like Chaz Surratt and then Pete Werner just went a couple picks beforehand.
Yeah.
So it's a big drop off to the next tier. Cox is a good cover for if they're looking for a Fred Warner mold.
Right.
Jabril Cox about as good as it gets.
Are we forgetting somebody at linebacker? Because obviously they have Mosley coming back, but
Mosley, Blake Cashman. They traded Avery Williamson.
Neville Hewitt's
free agent.
Hewitt's a free agent.
I think Cox is a good pick.
Okay. All right. We're gonna go with Cox. So now we're up at 86. Who's here for running back?
Javonte's actually still there. At 86. Hey, it's a light running back class. And people aren't it's a changing position and people are looking for committee backs. And I'm Javonte Williams, 86.
Wide receiver. Who else is still there? Dammy Brown is still there. Seth Williams is there.
Sage Surratt, baby.
Tylan Wallace, Amari Rodgers. Okay, so I would probably either pick Seth Williams to put him opposite Denzel Mims, or I'm picking, I mean, Javonte because he's still here, but. Yeah, those are the two that I would decide between. Think Javonte is the better pick?
No, I should probably go wide receiver, but I don't want to. I want Javonte.
We probably should go wide receiver. Is Seth Williams the one that makes the most sense for you? I'm looking at it now, and I feel like
Surratt over Seth, I think. For the skill sets that they bring, I was very impressed with Surratt's film. Obviously, we just got another year of Seth, and he played better. So I'm not. I know in the summer I liked Surratt better than Seth. Your dealer's pick. You always make me pick. You get your guy. Go get Seth Williams.
Well, I don't know if I mean Sage Surratt's also my guy. So we picked Justin Fields at 2, Azeez Ojulari at 23, Landon Dickerson at 34, and then Jabril Cox at 66. Man, I really like this draft.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't hit corner, but let's face it, folks. Like, you're not going to be able to hit everything that the Jets
need. We're not going to hit corner. We're not going to hit one of running back and wide receiver. Like, it's just going to be the nature of how this goes, you know?
Oh, man. I'll go Seth Williams. I'll pick Seth Williams here. I think that's it. I think that's all of their picks. We've got a million people trying to call us to get back up into the third round. But, yeah, that's all. So, in our mock offseason. Oh, wait. They added Kenny Golladay. We had them adding Kenny Golladay. So now they got Kenny Golladay, Seth Williams, Denzel Mims.
Crowder's a free agent after this year. Jameson
Crowder. We also added Yannick Ngakoue at edge, Azeez Ojulari at edge, shored up the interior offensive line with a great center in Landon Dickerson. Pick Justin Fields at number 2. I think that's a great offseason.
We gotta get a running mate for LaMichael Perine, but besides that, yeah.
Well, yeah, but
Jabril Cox was huge for us. That was really big.
This is a really great. If they could come away in the offseason with the guys that we've laid out here, I think that's fantastic.
Pick up the phone, Joseph.
Wow.
Make the call.
Solak and Sycamore Consulting.
You heard?
Just saying, Joe, I know he's a big fan of the podcast.
Absolutely. Like most general managers.
Of course. Yeah. They are advocate allies of the podcast. There we go. Another team takeover Tuesday in the books. Really enjoyed that one. Tomorrow, we are opening up the mock draft machine once again, but not just picking for one team. We're going to pick for all of the teams. It's a brand new midweek mock draft with almost the entire draft order now solidified. There's only two teams that could possibly switch spots at the very end of the order. We're going to run through an entire new first-round mock draft with some Senior Bowl tidbits in there as we go through and we report what's going on in Mobile, Alabama. We're also going to give a shout-out to the Seattle Seahawks, the Los Angeles Rams, and the Houston Texans who don't have first-round picks. Don't worry. We'll show some love to you guys. It's going to be another fun mock draft. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.